agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
Love the government, hug the government, love the government, hug the government, love the government.
Welcome to The Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Michael Baranowski, a professor of political science at Northern Kentucky University. I'm joined today by both of my conservative counterparts, Cleveland-area attorney Jay Carson and political and policy analyst Kristen Matheny. Hey, guys.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. You know, before we get started, and gosh, we have an awful lot to talk about this week, I want to thank our newest supporters, Fran, Sam, Josh, Sean, Amy, and Jacob. And it was
a lot of supporters.
Yeah, a lot of supporters, and we really appreciate it, you know, and especially as I've told a lot of our new supporters, in times like this, when things are so awful and polarized, I feel like what we try to do on this podcast is more important than ever. And I think listeners are responding to that, and we really appreciate that. Jacob, in particular, wrote in to say, thank you for all of your thoughtful podcasts since I started listening to you over 4 years ago. So he's an old timer with
wow.
The show. Yeah. He says, I know good information requires hard work, so I've decided to stop mooching and pay up. The recent insights you all bring are well worth it. And most importantly, the respectful attitudes you model are something we need so much more of. So thank you very much for that, Jacob. And all of you know that when you're a Patreon supporter, you get that second full-length episode every week. You get ad-free versions of all of our shows and other things at different levels. And to check it out, just go to patreon.com/politicsguys. And as always, we don't want inability to support the show because times are tough to get in the way of having you get that extra content. So if you'd like that, just send me an email, mike@politicsguys.com, and I will be sure to get you all set up. And of course, if you're not a fan of Patreon, we also have PayPal, and you'll find a PayPal support option at politicsguys.com/support. Thank you guys all so very much. So to kind of get to our first story, before we get to our first story, I just want to say we had hoped in last week's show to have all of us get together. In fact, it was Jay's suggestion. He contacted me, I think it was Wednesday, actually, when everything was going on the 6th, and said, you know, should we do a show? And I said, yeah, I think we definitely should. And we tried to get everyone together, but the logistics just didn't come together. And so for people wondering why Jay and Kristen weren't on, they both really wanted to be on the show last week, but it just didn't work out. And so I'm happy that the three of us can be on the show this week. So with that, I will turn things over to Kristen.
Yeah, so the first topic is sort of a natural follow-up to your discussion last week and everything that's been going on for the last 2 weeks. You know, this is about some of the deeper implications and developments of the riots at the Capitol. And so we wanted to address a couple of like key questions in all of this. And that's the first one is whether there are further national security implications here. We also wanted to discuss Trump's reaction since and sort of how the media has handled all of this, the ongoing investigation into who was involved and how these events occurred, because that's something that's developing. I mean, even today I was getting news alerts on my phone about, you know, different things, in, you know, evolving with the investigation. And then finally, some of the arrests that have come from it, and a lot of those occurred this week. So it's definitely not a news story, but it's a story that's like a juggernaut. It's just constantly evolving, like so many stories we talk about here on the show. So I guess that's the intro, Mike.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess the one thing I think a lot of folks are wondering is they heard my reaction and Trey's and Ken's reaction to this. And I think a lot of folks are saying, well, you know, Ken and myself, we're clearly people of the left, center to maybe a little bit further out, Ken would be. And Trey is still a Republican in name, but he's, you know, he was a Biden supporter and was very vocal about that. And so a lot of folks, I think, wanted to hear your reactions to, you know, immediate and both after you've had a little bit of time to think about it. And so I certainly would want to hear that as well. I think I have a pretty good idea, but maybe I can turn things on you guys a little bit and say, you know, Kristen, Jay, maybe starting with you, Kristen, What was your reaction? What's your reaction now to what happened on January 6th?
Well, you know, I have had a lot of time to think about it, but my reaction has really not changed, which is why I was so bummed that I couldn't be on the show last week, because I think I would have said the same thing. Unfortunately, my day job, I had to do the day job, so I wasn't able to join, but, you know, it happens. But so my reaction hasn't been the same. Has been the same. So the first thing that came to mind was that I was upset that there were a lot of people on the right, a lot of people who I know personally, who weren't really taking responsibility for what happened. And that really upset me, because I think that, you know, my fellow Republicans and conservatives are often so quick, you know, all for the last year, I feel like we've been so quick to point the finger at what was going on with riots across the country. And, you know, to point out some of the violence, some of the violent rhetoric. And yet, you know, when the ball was in our court, you know, there was this horrible event, this riot that occurred on Capitol Hill. And I think one of the things that disgusted me about some of the people on the right was just this like ignoring of what happened and this refusal to take responsibility. So that was the first thing that came to mind, was that I feel like there was this tremendous lack of taking responsibility that I was wanting to hear. And I was happy to hear that there were a lot of Republican elected officials who did step up and take responsibility for it. I thought that was necessary. You know, on the other hand, you know, the way that the media has handled it, the way that other elected officials have handled it, it's just become like a political circus. And it's just, I think overall, it sort of serves the purpose of showing us just how divided we are, as if we weren't already aware enough. You know, just how divided we are, how divided the coverage is. You know, I guess those were my two big takeaways. It was like a combination of like disgust and anger.
Jay, what about you?
So, you know, I think the and this is one of the reasons I wanted to go on, you know, sort of soon. And I think I'm with the same with Kristen. I don't think my perception or ideas of what happened has changed. But first, I want to say I was wrong on a whole lot of my predictions. I had, you know, said a number of times, hey, I think Trump is going to, this is merely rhetoric. Once the Electoral College votes, once it's all counted, he's going to say, yeah, I was cheated, but we're going to have the best transition ever. And I got that call wrong. My sense, and I'll tell you, I had sort of a weird, change of heart. This is, a week ago, Monday, 2 days before the riots, when, they published the Georgia phone call. And I posted something on the, Discord, group saying this, that, you know, in reading Trump's statements, just the transcript of the phone call, I came away very much with the impression that he is delusional, and I'm not a medical, you know, professional to make that diagnosis, obviously, but the transcript reads not as someone who is trying to float political talking points to get some sort of aim, or, you know, knows he's trying to steal an election. It sounds very much like someone who really believes, despite all the evidence, that he won, and he won by a lot. Yeah. And that troubled me. And I even posted that. I said, I think, look, a 25th Amendment discussion is warranted, at this point. Wednesday, and again, this is a little weird because I was in the middle of a work call, actually on the phone with some other folks who are active in the conservative movement, and we were sort of aghast. You know, one guy was reporting, "Hey, are you seeing this on TV? They're actually storming the Capitol." This is, you know, and I think the other place where I just got things wrong was I underestimated the propensity for violence among these Trump supporters. I had worked in, when I was worked into the legislature, I worked for a representative who had a fairly conservative district, sort of semi-rural. And, you know, I met a lot of colorful characters, right? I met a lot of, we'd often say this guy's a great American, and people who are very unapologetically patriotic, proud of their guns, proud of their rural heritage, very distrustful of federal and or state government. But nonetheless, all those people that I knew and had worked with and came to know, none of them, I believe, would have been involved in any sort of violence or would have condoned any sort of this sort of violence and destruction. I may have misread some of the Trump supporters, and I thought it was just sort of these good old boys who I had known, and again were sort of maybe colorful characters, but certainly not people who would turn violent or engage in the kind of behavior that we saw Thursday. Third, and this is more a philosophical point, just on where I'm coming down on this, and kind of goes to Kristen's point of folks who did have conservatives and Republicans who have not jumped up quickly enough to condemn this. My whole view of conservatism, Mike, and we talk about this probably ad nauseum to a whole lot of people, is sort of Burkean. Classical liberal view of how government and society should run. Jonah Goldberg had written something, and I don't even remember where, if it was one of his books or if it was a National Review piece, about mobs. And the whole idea is that the whole idea of conservatism is opposed to this sort of mob mentality and mob rule. And what I refer to on the one of the things is the torches and pitchfork bullshit sort of stuff. I mean, it's the same thing that Burke pushed against. And Jonah's statement was something along the line. And again, this is something he wrote years ago, and it may have even been related to like initial Trump campaigning, was that nothing good ever happens in a mob, right? And to me, that whole notion is counter to everything that I think conservatism ought to stand for. So that's kind of where I am, and it's tough because there is this push of I guess the other piece I want to point out there is also. I think something to be tremendously happy and hopeful about, and that is, despite this mob and what happened, the system worked. Vice President Pence did the right thing. Mitch McConnell did the right thing. Mitt Romney did the right thing. Lindsey Graham. A lot of these folks stood up. Now, Kristen's right. There's also folks who didn't stand up, and folks particularly in the House that I think that's troubling. But I think long run, it shows something the staying power of our Republic. And because here's the thing, I don't even think for example Mike Pence, Mitch McConnell. I don't think there was ever even a second where they would have entertained the notion of what Trump was talking about. It was sort of dismissed out of hand. And on the one hand, there's a lot of folks who are saying, well, we should look to McConnell Pence and say, look, this guy is a hero. And in some respects, I think he was. But another respect, he's just doing really the very basics of his job, right?
Yeah.
On the one hand, I very much appreciate what he did, but I think it's also, they did what they were supposed to do. So, I think we can take some hope, from that. So,
yeah, I'm not as hopeful as you are. Certainly. I mean, I think, I think a lot of the, you know, I respect.
I didn't say I was hopeful.
Okay.
I said we could take
some hope, sure.
We can take some hope. That's where it is.
Yeah. You know, I think that there were a lot of people who didn't stand up, and a lot of, you know, and I said this last week. I said, it's not that I don't blame the insurrectionists for doing what they did, because if you went in there and, you know, the people who, you know, beat the Capitol police officer to death with the fire extinguisher, or who were, you know, beating on police with flat American flagpoles, and talk about the just bizarre anti-symbolism and all those, that's horrific and horrendous. And I hope they get exactly what they deserve. But the people I really believe are responsible are the people who have manipulated these folks. And of course, that starts with President Trump. You know, there are reports saying that, multiple reports saying that when this first happened, you know, the president was watching this stuff and actually taking a certain amount of pleasure in this thing. And it took quite a while for him to actually act. And to this day, he has not yet done what I think we would all agree that any responsible president would do, was would go on TV and make a national address in the light of the Capitol being stormed by a mob, which, you know, hasn't happened since 1814. So the idea that didn't happen, the idea that, I mean, it's clear that Donald Trump has abrogated, you know, all of his responsibilities as president, and the buck stops with him. And I would say that Donald Trump has done more to harm, to damage democratic norms and trust in this country than any president I can think of in the history of the Republic. And I think he will go down in history being infamous for that.
Yeah, I think he had maybe one very small window where he could have done something, and you know, maybe gone on national TV at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night from the Oval Office. And said, this is a terrible day for America, and taken responsibility, for at least some of what happened, and said that this is not, you know, why I ran, this is not what I intended, this is, and done something like that to do some sort of, for lack of better word, damage control to save his legacy. But he didn't. He had sort of these half-hearted tweets and pre-recorded videos. And again, from what we read, and we don't know everything yet, and from what folks have alluded to, Liz Cheney said something in her floor speech when she voted to impeach that, you know, listen, as we learn more, and we're going to be learning more, you know, about what he was doing during that time. We do know there were multiple calls from congressmen, from governors, from all sorts of other insiders to the president saying, you've got to get out there and say something. And there are reports that, you know, advisors, Ivanka Trump and Mark Meadows, were urging the president, look, you've got to do something right now. And again, he only reluctantly put out sort of this half-hearted tweet, and I think that's just really troubling. Whether, and again, to me, there's a real question of whether he is, you know, in his right mind.
Yeah.
And I guess because the other part of this, to me, in the right mind question is, it's you know, goes to sort of something that people have asked, sort of, well, with these people who broke into the Capitol, what exactly was the plan? I mean, to some extent, some of it, there was evidence that they wanted to take hostages. Some may have wanted to assassinate the vice president. But then there's also just, and you get this from the video and from some of the pictures, that all these folks who got in there and just sort of have this bewildered look about them, and they figured, oh, we broke into the Capitol, now let's take some selfies. That this was just, you know, in insanity, I guess. And I don't know a better word for it than that.
Well, you know, and getting back to the responsibility point, you know, it seems to me it just feels like a Sorcerer's Apprentice type of situation where a bunch of people, Donald Trump first and foremost, but Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, and, you know, Mo Brooks and some others said, well, this is something we can use that's going to help us, you know, whip up the crowd and stay in power. And this is the kind of, you know, rhetoric that's always been used. And we're just going to take it up to 11, but it's going to be fine. And all of a sudden now they realized, oh, well, this is out of control. But they're still trying to sort of, you know, triangulate that. Well, I mean, because someone like a Josh Hawley, he's painted himself into a corner. So is Donald Trump.
Yes.
And so is Ted Cruz. And I think it's pretty clear that I think more than anyone else, Josh Hawley, except for Donald Trump, bears responsibility for elected officials, because here's a guy who sees himself as the next president of the United States and thought, well, I can be the heir to Donald Trump. And he's clearly somebody who, given his background and pedigree, knows that all this, that he's peddling in lies. And that's just what they are.
Well, I think that's a really good point. Because to the extent that I say, I think Trump may be truly delusional and believe this. Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz are both Ivy League law graduates, both clerked for Supreme Court justices. If you have any idea how elite that is,
yeah.
Right? I mean, neither Hawley nor Cruz is insane. I think they obviously knew better, but did this out of political calculus, and that's really troubling. And disappointing, because they are people who certainly know better, and allowed this to go forward. And I think could have had, there's so many other ways that they could have, people could have played this out, because I'm, and Kristen, I'm interested in your thoughts on, mm-hmm. on election issues. I still absolutely believe there are plenty of reasons why we should take a good hard look at this election.
Yeah.
Mail-in voting and a lot of these shenanigans that happened, a lot of, activist decisions by state Supreme Courts.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a proper topic for discussion. But all of those, again, all of those put together does not, it doesn't add up. Numbers don't add up even close. To a Trump victory, much less a Trump landslide, and there's plenty of other ways to do this rather than a sort of a fake certification or a fake certification objection, which would indicate that, look, we can somehow change the result, and those folks knew better and didn't were happy to go along with the goofy. Sort of Lynn Wood narrative.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on something here because, I find myself kind of thinking about some of these bigger picture issues for the first time in a very long time. I'm starting to think about things like messaging. I deal with social media for work. I work with it. So, and we'll probably get more into some of those issues. But, I've been forced to think about messaging with, the banning and the, deplatforming. And I've been kind of thinking about what's happened over the last 4 years. And, like a lot of Trump supporting Republicans, I've seen and felt a lot of anger about some of the messaging issues that we've had and some of the truly inflammatory and I think hate-filled language coming from people on the far left towards people like me, people who are just kind of like regular, Trump yeah. supporters, Republican Trump supporters. I've made no secret on this show of the fact that, I don't always agree with Trump. I think I totally agree with Jay that he just fumbled this one and messed this up. I think it's going to tarnish his legacy to a great extent. I think I agree with Jay. There was this narrow window where something could have been done, and certainly not enough was done on his part and on the part of a lot of Republicans, like I said before. But, one of the things that I've talked about on this show also is consistency. And, one of the things that I think a lot of people on the right have sort of pointed a finger at, and said to people on the left is like, you're using this inflammatory messaging, this sort of hate-filled messaging. You're painting us to be all of these truly awful things, things that I don't even want to say, the names and the things I've been called and I'm sure you've been called, Jay. They're not true. But I'm sure you and I, like, and I'm sure Mike has stories too, moving in the opposite direction. I mean, just the amount of divisiveness and hatred hatred coming from one side to another, I think is the thing that disgusts me the most. And so, you know, for the last 4 years, you know, I've experienced just personally the loss of family members, the loss of friends over this, not over anything I've done or said, but they've made the choice to essentially abandon me and other members of my family and friends just because of how we voted. And just, this is the state that we're in right now. You know, we're sort of deep in this hole and we're looking up and you know, I'm not hopeful about that. I wish I could be more hopeful about that. But for the last few years, you know, I've pointed to the left and I've said, you know, like, look, there is this hatred. Yes, it's also coming from the right. There's divisiveness on both sides. But, you know, look at some of the things Maxine Waters says. Look at some of the things Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, like, you know, these truly hateful, inflammatory things. So you have this powder keg situation that sort of came to a bubbled over in a Capitol riot. It was disgusting. It was, you know, hate filled. It was angry and violent. And, you know, if we're going to sit here and we're going to point at the left and say, look at all these horrible things you've said, look at, you know, what you've incited in the past, look at all this violent rhetoric that you've used. We must, and I'm talking to all Republicans, right of me, you know, more moderate than me, we must hold ourselves responsible first. I hold the Republican Party more responsible. I look to the Republican Party and I'm more ashamed of what they've done than the left, because I've come to expect better and I've not seen that from people on the right. And so I think a lot of us, you know, who are sort of in the middle where we did support Trump and we do think that there are some legitimate issues, like Jay said, you know, with, you know, election results, this is a deeper conversation we need to have. The same sort of finger pointing and anger that we're projecting on the left, we now need to project tenfold on the right, and we need to hold ourselves accountable. And I think that's why I was so frustrated with Trump's response or lack thereof. And that's why I was so frustrated, you know, with some of the members of Congress and you know, other elected officials not coming out immediately and condemning it, because I thought this is an opportunity for us to show what we're all about. You know, we're not about mob rule. We're not, all these things Jay said. He's absolutely right. But we just, like, we dropped the ball. And I was so disgusted and I was so frustrated by it. And I'm still frustrated by it. I just feel like we could do better. We could do better.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly right. And you bring up, this is sort of the one of the real challenges for leaders in the Republican Party, conservative movement on the right, whatever, you know, you want to call it, is trying to get rank and file people out there, the people who have been shunned and sort of, you know, called names and so forth,
right,
by all these people, to get them to take that high road. And it's not easy, because the blowback that you hear and you get and the anger is, look, why can't we be angry back, right? Why can't we say nasty things back? They're going to call us all these things. And this is partly how Trump was elected, right?
Right, I mean, like,
he was elected because he was the guy who was going to fight, that he was not going to back down. And to some extent, and Kristen, I'll tell you, this is something that this haunts me personally. This is my own weird psychological issues, and it comes up at work all the time, right? I mean, I'm in litigation, and you know, my worldview is always that, you know, you ought to try to meet the other guy halfway, understand where they're coming from, not be a jerk. You know, you're there to do your job, represent your client, and so forth. And I can't tell you how many times in my life I've had the situation where I've sort of done something out of, and your husband is attorney, so maybe he can have this same sort of experience. But so you do the right thing, you do the decent thing, and then the other guy screws you. And it's tough to live with that, right? It is really tough to say, I don't know. But anyway, that's sort of, it comes back to me, the same thing here is you want to take the high road, and then someone else will point out quite correctly, you know, that yeah, you're gonna lose, and that's a problem we have to face, and we got to figure a solution out of it. I mean, it is sort of the Mitt Romney problem, right? I mean, Mitt Romney, I think, was a great person, a nice guy. He ran a decent campaign, one that was not likely to win in any event, just because of, you know, other issues. But, you know, they accused him of murder, essentially. And he smiled and took it and took the high road, and he lost. And I think people then, especially Donald Trump in the next election cycle, took that lesson and said, no, I'm not going to back down. And it's difficult to find that place of not backing down, of not caving in, but also of still taking the high road and not throwing gas on the fire.
Yeah, I think there's a distinction between, I think you'll both agree, between taking the high road and just not responding and being this sort of, you know, classically virtuous person and inciting riots or insurrection and, you know, murder. I think there's a there's a pretty big line between those two things. And Donald Trump has pretty clearly stepped over that line. And the fact that I am fairly certain that Donald Trump will suffer no real consequences for this, I think that's a lesson as well. Because I think, you know, Josh Hawley will suffer. Sure, his book contract was canceled, but someone else is going to pick that up. And sure, big donors are not going to be giving to him maybe for a while. But, you know, Donald Trump got a huge portion of his money from small money donors. And so I think the lesson here that a lot of ambitious, smart, amoral people like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, by the way, the most hated man in the Senate by all accounts, have picked up on is the big lie works. I mean, Donald Trump has built his career on the big lie. Even before the Obama birther thing, he realized that if you just scream loud enough and get enough people to go along with you, the truth doesn't really matter. And he has proven that works. And I think politicians like Josh Hawley, like Ted Cruz, have picked up on that. And that's going to be, and I know we're going to talk more about this later, probably in the bonus show, I think that's the future of the Republican Party. And it makes me incredibly, incredibly sad. But anyway, you know, one other thing I wanted
to... Go ahead. I was going to add in something else that, again, this episode's a little kind of goofy, freeform, you know, because of what...
It's the best kind of episode.
But, and part of that, and I think you're right, but there's another piece to that, and that is that we've had this huge collective distrust in our institutions.
Sure. Yeah.
And in some cases that's warranted. And that's troubling to me also. And I think Kristen, you might agree with me on that
big time. Yeah.
You know, look, the idea that, sort of the mainstream media, has gone so far that no matter what they report, even if what they're reporting is absolute fact, you have people who will not believe them because of, past issues. And there's also just something going on that, again, I don't understand this whole QAnon phenomenon. And again, I would have written them off, and had written them off as, hey, it's a couple goofy people in their basements, and not any actual real, movement or group of people, but here's a lot of folks marching and waving flags and, again, it's tough when you see on TV, right? I mean, is it when they show those people, well, okay, is it those 10 people or is it really, you know, 10,000 people, who are out there believing this? But that to me is also troubling. And that goes beyond politics, right? I think that's just, a strange, just, I don't even know how you deal with something like that, that is sort of so unhinged. And I don't know, Kristen, if you have any thoughts on that. I think you sort of have studied that or have more expertise on that than I do. But yeah, I think that's troubling. And that's something that wasn't there in the past. It's not just here's the regular economic anger or policy anger or even the cultural anger, right? Of hey, my guy who represents the good old days versus these progressives. It's something that is just out there, crazy and bizarre, and I don't know how to account for it.
Yeah, I mean, just to pick up with your media point, because that is something that that I've had to study in a, you know, in a work context, and also, you know, in an academic context. You know, the role of the media, the role of messaging, how they control messaging, how they, you know, manage to persuade and incite in some cases. You know, I've compared all of this. I love Dr. Seuss, and I've compared on this show kind of what's going on as like this escalation to the point where it's like the last scene from the Butter Battle book, you know, which is famously about the Berlin Wall, where you have, you know, somebody from one side and somebody from the other, each one holding a bomb ready to drop it on the other side. And it kind of ends with a big question mark. And, you know, I've said in the past often that I think that we are kind of on the precipice of that. I think we're moving towards that. You know, we're almost there, and I think we're there. And, you know, I guess the, you know, ending, and this gives me a lot of pause and a lot of, it causes me a lot of frustration and a lot of sadness. I think all three of us can agree, probably, because, you know, each of us sees that, you know, the kind of the fate of the country and this divisiveness, it, you know, it kind of hangs in the balance right now. And we're at this moment where the divide is increased by, you know, the messaging of the media. And I'm not just necessarily talking about right-wing media or left-wing media, because, you know, I've heard shocking and like truly incredible in a bad way things said by people on the right and people on the left, people who purport to be journalists who are nothing but, you know, like conspiracy theorists, pundits, you know, depending on which side you're on. These are people who, you know, make a living out of, you know, espousing these crazy beliefs, that the Q people. On one side, you know, you have people in mainstream media who are, you know, sort of like fanning the flames of this violent language, who are diminishing the role of people on the other side. I feel like that rhetoric and that type of language that's being used more and more and more is just incredibly dangerous and damaging, like to the point where, for the first time in, you know, my like a little over three decades on the planet, for the first time, I feel scared about the future. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, President Trump is, you know, he's not going to be in office starting on Wednesday. And, you know, I think, you know, on the left, I have a lot of Democratic friends who aren't terribly political, who are just overjoyed with the fact that Trump will not be in office and, you know, we'll have President Biden. And, you know, they believe that things will get better. And I absolutely don't think things will get better, not because of Joe Biden, but because of where we as a society are and where we as a country are and the damage that's been done. I mean, in my lifetime, I hope that we're able to move past this and forget. But there's so much anger and so much division. And I mean, I don't mean to keep repeating myself, but I think I place a lot of that blame. I place a lot of it on politicians like President Trump, on, you know, people on the left and on the right, all of this divisive language. But I place a lot of that responsibility on the media, you know, and I think, you know, I don't think that point gets lost, but I just feel like every single day more and more I see it being stoked. And it just, it makes me feel a lot of like despair.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we haven't even touched on impeachment yet. Go figure. But before we do get to that, one other point I just wanted to quickly bring up before we move on is, you know, we haven't even talked about the massive security failures. And certainly there's going to be some sort of 9/11 type commission on the security breakdown, because one of the first things, well, after I recovered from my shock, that occurred to me was, wow, if I'm a Russian or a Chinese agent, you know, government, I have people in that crowd for sure, because we would have people in that crowd if, you know, if there was a strategic rival and we had evidence that there was going to be some sort of a event, and there was plenty of evidence of that. And so these people almost assuredly had access to the Capitol, had access to computers and documents and things like that. And, you know, we don't even know what the national security implications of that are, but that's, you know, that's something that's going to come out. And certainly we're seeing some of the, you know, people resigning and being fired and so forth. But that is a really big deal from a security standpoint. And certainly there are going to be, there'll be a commission, and there will be, you know, I'll certainly be interested in seeing where that leads. So you guys want to talk about impeachment?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So, all right. So I'll intro the topic, although I think we all know what's going on. So President Trump was impeached for the official charge was citing insurrection. This is his second impeachment from the House of Representatives. And this happened on January 13th. So just this earlier this week. And just to a quick update, 10 Republicans joined Democrats voting to impeach. And that included most notably Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming, the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. And so I guess some of our questions moving forward, just to kind of spur the conversation, because we all kind of, you know, we watched the news, we knew what happened, but, you know, what are our predictions? What will happen next? You know, there's obviously a very abbreviated timeline here. The inauguration is going to be taking place this Wednesday. So, you know, what's going to happen between now and then? And, you know, the bigger question that I guess I'm more interested in answering is, you know, what does all of this mean and where does it lead? Is it just, you know, is it just going to fizzle out or is this something that's going to have bigger implications? So I'll turn it over to you guys and then I'll weigh in, I guess.
I guess the point I want to start with is just the article of impeachment. And it seems to me, I know some people are arguing, well, it's too legalistic in that sense. And I get that argument saying, well, did what Donald Trump do?
I'd argue that. Yeah.
Did what he do meet the legal definition of incitement of insurrection? And I think you can make a case that no, it didn't. If you look at the transcript of his speech at that Stop the Steal rally, that seems like pretty standard sort of, you know, even if it's, you know, vile, semi-violent political rhetoric, it's the sort of thing we've been hearing for years. And so I think from that strictly legal standpoint, no. But of course, as we said for the first impeachment, that this is not a legal sort of thing. This is a political thing. Along the same lines, I feel like even though it wasn't included in this article impeachment, I think a lot of people are thinking about those Georgia calls. Jay, you mentioned those, and maybe that should have been another article of impeachment. Again, I don't think there was necessarily a violation of the law there, though some people are arguing that. But again, it's the question of whether or not the president is fit to serve as president. And I think you take what he did, what he's been doing, and the Georgia calls, the Stop the Steal, the incessant big lie sort of thing, that to me, this is a fairly easy call. Is Donald Trump absolutely should be impeached and removed? My big question, and the thing I really wanted to hear from both of you is whether or not you agree with me about that. If you were, say, in the House or in the Senate, if you would vote to, you know, to remove Donald Trump, to convict him.
So where I come out on this, you know, I look at these and there are sort of three tests, right? And the first is the legal test, right? Is this authorized by law? Is there a legal procedure to do this? Is, you know, do we meet those criteria? And I think obviously there is in this case. I would agree. And I think they could have gotten more Senate votes if they had pared back the articles and made it something less legalistic and more general, sort of a gross dereliction of duty type argument, because I think that's much harder for someone to, you know, poke holes at, right? It's much harder to say that there wasn't a sort of but yeah, for, you know, legally, did he incite a riot or insurrection? But I think, and I'll throw in this sort of partisan, just, you know, analysis. I don't think Nancy Pelosi wants to get a Senate conviction. She wants to have a bunch of Republican senators on the record voting against conviction. Which is a shame, because there is a chance here to have sort of a moment of national unity. But she's not going to have it. Secondly, there's sort of the factual test, and I think this meets the factual test, assuming we had the correct legal diagnosis. If everything we understand to be true, obviously we know what he said at the rally. We know what happened after the rally. We know what the reasonable foreseeable consequences of what he said were, whether or not he incited it. But he certainly understood that that was a possibility, lit the fuse, I think, as Liz Cheney said. And then I guess the third test I would look at is the prudential one, right? Is this a good idea for what it is you want to accomplish? And that's where I get more hung up. The idea is will impeachment throw gas on the fire, or will it be a good bipartisan denouncement of what happened? And I'm on the fence right now. My sense is, if I were in the House, I would have voted to impeach. If I'm in the Senate, I would probably vote to convict. Based on, and again, I would have to do it, I have to sort of overlook some of what's going on in the actual articles, right? And say, but listen, I'm voting to convict because this is sending the message that what happened is inexcusable, regardless of whether you call it incitement of riot or something else. And I think, you know, as history would look back, there it's not going to look so much at the language of the articles. It would look on, you know, what happened, and then what did people do? So that's where I am, and it's reluctant, right? Because I very much see the idea that this could well throw gas on the fire. There's also the weird thing that we've got now of to the extent he's convicted, it will be after he's out of office. It could be fairly well after he's out of office. I think that's, I just don't know how that plays, because, you know, who the hell would have ever have thought this would happen? I mean, if you're looking at, well, what would the founders have said? You know, if you approach them, well, can you convict a president after he's out of office? I think they would have, like, you know, scratched their wigged heads and said, well, what are you talking about? Look, it's, you know, it's hot. We're tired. Let's just get done with this. As a textualist, I think you could read the Constitution to say, yeah, you can convict someone or convict after they're out of office. But it sometimes gets to the what's the point? And I understand the point is so he can't hold office again. But I don't know. So that's where I am. I am. And look, this puts me in the company of a lot of folks at the Wall Street Journal, a lot of folks at National Review, you know, sort of big conservative right-leaning outfits that are in the headlines calling for impeachment. So, I think that's where I am.
Kristen?
I differ. I would not have voted to impeach, and I'll explain why. So, you know, one of the points that Jay made, I agree with a lot of what Jay said. One of the points that Jay made was that there are, you know, there's sort of this third measure, which is, you know, ultimately is this, you know, good for the country? Is this going to, you know, promote healing? This was something that a lot of members of Congress in particular were coming forth with over the last week or so. There were a lot of members of Congress who were on the fence right up until the end. And they were swayed by this. They said, well, you know, I feel like, you know, the incitement was there, but I just don't think this is going to promote healing. I think this is just going to increase division. While I don't necessarily think that this is a reason not to vote to impeach, you know, I agree that it's a valid point, and I think it deserves to be discussed. Although, I don't think it's a reason to vote no for impeachment. And I think, you know, I guess one of the things that Jay brought up that I found really interesting, and it's something I found myself thinking about a lot over the last week, is the fact that, you know, there's been a lot of talk that Nancy Pelosi had, you know, there was like this opportunity for her. She wanted to bring the country together. I don't think that's true at all. You know, I think if the last 4 years, I'm still upset. You know, I think if the last 4 years hadn't happened, you know, if there hadn't been just attempt after attempt after attempt to, you know, and I'm going to go beyond Trump, because I think sometimes it was warranted. The criticism of Trump was very much warranted. And I've said that. But to smear people who voted for him, his supporters, politicians who sided with him on one issue or another. It's more than just an attempt to smear. I mean, there were attempts to dox these people, get people fired. There were people coming out and promoting, like, assaulting, Trump supporters and doing these horrible things. And we had, we had another impeachment that took place not too long ago. So, I think there are some valid points that were made. You know, I definitely disagree, totally disagree, and reject the way that Donald Trump acted and the things he said. I don't for a second believe that Nancy Pelosi was looking to promote any sort of unity. I don't think she saw this as an opportunity to come together. I don't think I don't want to say all Democrats, but I think there are probably very few Democrats who saw this as an opportunity beyond, a chance to just, keep sort of digging in their heels and keep pushing and keep pushing. I don't necessarily think that these complaints were frivolous. I think the issue of impeachment had merit. I think it's something that deserved discussion. But I mean, not for a second do I think that this was an effort of Nancy Pelosi's or really any other Democrat in Congress to promote this unity and move on.
Not a single Democrat in Congress. So every Democrat.
And that's why I qualified what I said. I do think that there were Democrats, I said not every single Democrat felt this way. And I can't say that with any sort of certainty, because I do think there are people on the right and on the left who are there for all the right reasons. But, I guess, again, like, this is symptomatic of having worked, on political campaigns for so long. Like, I'm a little jaded, and I've worked with some of these people. Jay, I'm sure you can relate. A lot of them have these selfish, narcissistic, and ulterior motives, and it's not just Republican. I've worked mostly with Republicans, and I say that. It's also Democrats, and I would never say that all Democrats want to see Republicans fail or all Republicans want to see Democrats fail. I think there are some Republicans and Democrats there who are there for all the right reasons, who really do want to promote unity. But to a larger extent, I don't think I would include Nancy Pelosi in that statement.
Sure, maybe not. Let me just respond to the unity thing, because I agree unity is important. But before we can move toward unity, Republicans are famously the party of personal responsibility. And before we can come together, people who have committed atrocious and despicable acts have to own up to them. And so I think then if that happens, then it is only right and fair that we try to come together in a spirit of reconciliation. But as long as Donald Trump, as long as Ted Cruz, as long as Josh Hawley, Mo Brooks, Jim Jordan continue to push what are clearly egregious lies, then I don't see how there can be any sort of unity. So I agree, we need unity, and we should not be demonizing people, for their past actions if they own up to what they are doing. But until they do that, how can we possibly have unity? How can there be any personal, if there's no personal responsibility? The lesson that comes away from this, when Donald Trump does not suffer any sort of consequences for this, the lesson to Josh Hawley, the lesson to Ted Cruz and all those ambitious, amoral people, and you're right, they're on the left as well, but the lesson to those people on the right is, hey, this works, and what's my downside? There really is no downside. So that is why Donald Trump should be impeached. Well, he was impeached, convicted, and barred from holding office, to show that actions have consequences. And that should absolutely be a lesson that Republicans, at least old school Republicans especially, should really kind of resound with them. And I think it has, from the Wall Street Journal, National Review, as you said, Jay.
So, and Kristen, just so you know, Mike often takes me to task for being too cynical and jaded. But I think you and I are both we've played the game and we've sort of seen this, and what you just said goes to my point of the how do you deal with the say yes, we'll take the high road, and then mm-hmm. you're going to get completely clocked for doing it. And I think, Mike, I think where we disagree with you, I agree, they ought to have responsibility.
Yeah,
but the way Pelosi designed the articles of impeachment are such that they're geared toward to create a partisan split. She's looking for a vote to use against people,
yeah.
Not for a vote to show that we all condemn this, right? Because there's
disagree with that. I mean, you can make a reasonable good faith case that what Donald Trump did was incite insurrection.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and so
oh, yeah.
You can make that case.
But let me tell you this: if you're going to the jury and asking them to convict. And you've got one case of we're going to charge this guy with aggravated murder, aggravated murder 1. There's all these elements that you have to prove, or jury, you could also convict him of manslaughter. And if the goal is to get a conviction, then you go with the manslaughter.
I understand your argument,
that,
but I think it's
gets you unity. That gets you enough votes in the Senate.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. See, yeah. Because if it had been just a broad kind of vague, not citing any sort of legal things, then what the response would have been for the exact same number of people who aren't going to vote to convict is, well, look, there's not even any sort of legal violation. How can we convict him and remove him if everything he did was perfectly within the law? There would be no way to win this.
I think that'd be a tougher argument to make. And you would have people like Cruz, you wouldn't have people like Cruz. You would have people like McConnell and Romney and Sass and many others making the moral idea that look, yes, this kind of gross dereliction of duty does count as a high crime or misdemeanor.
Sure, you're going to have those people,
particularly when it's directed against a co-equal branch of the government.
Not going to matter.
This isn't just some criminal offense. And impeachment is mainly right. One of its the big purposes of it is to guard that balance of power between the three different branches. So I just think you would have a much better chance at a conviction, and I still think you do have a chance, although it wanes as time goes on, right? Because people are going to become less angry, and 3 months from now, who knows where we'll be? But
the news cycle moves on too quickly.
Yeah, I doubt.
Well,
I think this is
a little bit different. This is a breaching of the Capitol, an insurrection against the government. I don't think this is we forget this in a week sort of thing. But I think
in a week, but you may forget it in a couple months, and there may be.
Yeah.
There may well be. Look, there was a great little Babylon Bee headline the other day of out of work waitress excited to see
that.
Congress spending time impeaching Trump again. That 6 months from now, people maybe say, "What the hell? He's out of office. Who cares?" Great. So I think that's why the longer the time runs, and look for Biden's point of view, right? I mean, the best thing for Joe Biden would be to make sort of a wonderful denouncing statement about how terrible Trump is. And absolutely, he ought to be convicted. But you know what? We got bigger priorities right now. We need to move forward. He's gone. And let's start moving forward. And I think that would be a great message. It would enable him to get stuff moving quicker.
That would be awful. That would be a travesty, because for what Donald Trump did, there have to be consequences. And if Joe Biden and everyone doesn't try to extract what are reasonable and fair consequences for his disgraceful actions, then that sends a message. And I think that's – and whether it's – maybe it's not, because it's not going to be conviction. There aren't going to be the votes in the Senate to convict Donald Trump. I'm positive of that. There might be half a dozen, maybe. You might get up to 10 or so. But after that, it's just not going to happen. Now, another option is the 14th Amendment. As a lot of folks have pointed out, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment essentially says that anyone who's engaged in insurrection or given aid and comfort to insurrectionists cannot hold federal or state office. And so how that would potentially work, now this obviously hasn't been used since after the Civil War.
It was intended for Jefferson Davis.
Yeah, but how that would work would be presumably Congress, through a majority vote, could vote that, could essentially, because Congress has the authority through appropriate legislation in Section 5 to enforce the provisions of the 14th Amendment. So they could presumably legislatively say that Donald Trump is in fact someone who gave aid and comfort insurrectionists, and therefore he cannot hold federal or state office. And that would only require a majority vote in both chambers. Now, it would still be subject to a filibuster, so it would require 60 votes in the Senate to get past that. But that's I don't think that's going to happen. And I think in the end, what is going to happen, and this is my prediction, is there will be no significant consequences for Donald Trump, and that is going to be a truly horrible thing.
Let me just throw in this little bit though about my idea of I don't want to say amnesty because that's certainly not what I'm proposing. But keep in mind, if impeachment, a trial proceeds and it goes slowly, you could be 6 months into the Biden presidency, and what's going to be the main topic of discussion? It's going to be Donald Trump.
He will still take six months.
He will still control the agenda. He will still control it. It will still he'll keep that alive. And the longer it drags on, the more he would become a martyr to his followers. Yeah.
A trial would take a couple of weeks at most, given. Yeah. And so I don't see that. And also, I know there's a debate over whether or not the Senate can actually go through the impeachment trial and conduct other business. And there's some precedent for that in the Clinton impeachment. And it seems like McConnell has suggested that's a question for the Senate parliamentarian. But in any case, again, I understand the argument that it slows down things. But given the threat to, I mean, given the severity of what Donald Trump has done, that's a price I would say, if things are a little bit slower. I think this is so important. This strikes at the fundamental trust in democracy that everything else stems from, that not doing everything within reasonable, that within reason to hold Donald Trump accountable is a huge, colossal mistake.
And, just to sort of add on to some of these points, as you guys were talking, I found myself kind of drifting towards the big question of, how tragic is it in so many ways that there are so many Americans who don't follow this and don't care about it, that don't care about these conversations. And, I know it's cliche to say that. I know it's cliche to say that, there are a lot of people who are, in fact, on both sides, who are, in fact, low information. But, obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, if you're listening to any political podcast, you're in the minority of Americans who truly care about some of these deeper issues, who, want to see a national conversation about election, security, who want to see a national conversation about Donald Trump and what happened and insurrection and, all of these bigger issues we're talking about. But, I think it just speaks to, where we are as a country, this like sense of reflexive hatred, I applaud you guys for having this debate. I think these are questions that we need to ask and we need to consider. And while I do think that I agree with Mike that, a trial, whether you agree that a trial should take place or not, it would be very quick. I also agree with Jay that, essentially what it would do is it would, cause Donald Trump to live rent free in people's minds and exactly. In the minds of the media for months and months and months and months. So I think we have to weigh both of these, yes, it a trial would be fast. And yes, there are a lot of Americans and I acknowledge that openly. There are a lot of Americans on both sides who feel that he should be tried and that this needs to be part of the conversation. But I also think that sometimes we give too much credit to the behavior of the media and the behavior of mainstream Americans who aren't listening to this podcast and podcasts like it.
I disagree on that the trial will be fast, but my last point, I know this has been a crazy long freeform type, but I just want to point out by historical precedent, Abraham Lincoln in his second inaugural said, let us proceed with charity towards all and malice towards none. And look, if you want to talk about divisive times, that was literally days, weeks after a war of people shooting at each other. It was a war over slavery, right? The biggest issue we've got. And So to the extent that, look, obviously those people who are far more culpable than what Donald Trump would be, but Lincoln looked at this and said, look, I can either take the kind of the vengeance route or the healing route. And he chose the healing route. Now, again, to my high road, argument, people could point out he got shot a week later. So, I just want to point out that there is historical precedent for, in divisive times, presidents stepping up and saying, look, we need to move forward. I think, yes, the other example would be Gerald Ford, and things didn't work out great for him electorally either. But I think there's an opportunity, there's a play there for Biden and Pelosi if they choose to take it.
But let's be clear, the union didn't say, let's stop fighting the South. Because they believe that they were wrong and the union forces were right about the fact that they were wrong. So, yeah, there was a time
but
for
at that point, one of
reconciliation.
My point is the union had already won.
Right. But I'm saying point. The war had to be fought. So this would be allowing. I mean, anyway, that's yeah. But,
right.
but
and yeah. they let the Confederates keep their guns on the way home. Right.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, like you said, Jay, this has been kind of a long freeform sort of. thing, and before we do go, Kristen, you have a kind of an announcement, I guess you could say, for us, and so why don't you tell folks about that?
Oh yeah, so just to let everybody know, I'm not leaving the podcast forever. I am actually, it's very exciting. I'm going to be taking a couple of months off to actually embark on kind of a little side hustle project, some consulting work that I've been asked to do with a couple of other people. And it actually directly relates to a lot of the things that I studied in grad school and some of the things I specialized in the past. So I'm excited to kind of get back to my academic roots and, to maybe embark on something that could be exciting in the future. And, over the next couple of months, I've been talking to Mike about this. I'm excited about it. I will be back. but, there, I might miss some shows here and there. I'll try to come on, as much as I possibly can. But this project's going to require some travel and it'll be mostly on weekends. So, I don't know if I'm going to get to be on every scheduled show, but I will do my best. And, I'm still here. I'm not really going anywhere. I'm just taking a little hiatus. So.
All right. And we will be, you will certainly be missed, Kristen, and I will be very happy when you're back on a regular basis. So
yeah. I'll miss the show a lot. But I will be back and ready to go.
Yes, we didn't want anyone to think that we were deplatforming Kristen. And
no way.
That is something that actually we're going to be talking about on our bonus show, Donald Trump's deplatforming, and just in general, that whole social media thing. And that's right up your alley, Kristen, for sure. And and with any luck, we can also have an opportunity to get into an actual policy story. President-elect Biden's American Rescue Plan, a $1.9 trillion, all kinds of stuff in there. And I'm sure you guys have some pretty strong views on that. And maybe even, depending on how things go, a little bit about the future of the Republican Party. And I doubt we'll have time for listener questions, but maybe one or two. I don't know. So if you are a Patreon supporter, that will be in your feed midweek. I think Wednesday usually pops up. And if you aren't a Patreon supporter, just go to patreon.com/politicsguys to sign up. And again, remember that if financial considerations prevent you from doing that right now, just send me an email, mike@politicsguys.com, and I will get you set up with full access to that second weekly episode. And one thing, again, that is completely free that we really do appreciate is if you could subscribe to the show, leave ratings and reviews, and especially if you would share episodes on social media. If you just generally want to reach us, it's mail@politicsguys.com. You can also check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Politics Guys, and you can find the URLs there in the show notes. And a special thanks to our executive producers, Bruce Johnson, Wilma Moreno, Andra Masker, Daniel Toe, Chris Wilkerson, and Nathan Sosnowski. We'll be back with a new show next week. We hope you'll join us.